Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
These women can assist you in preparation for your bath.
Thank you, but I've already bathed.
Oh, in the prison?
No, in the village.
That was some time ago.
What, two baths in a week? What, do you want me to catch the flux?
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 500 for the week of February 26, 2024. I am Tickets 2 to the Shogun, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Breath of the Almighty, Sarah D. Bunting.
Mint, my lord.
Celebrate a Coruscant, Tara Ariano.
Sake tea or me.
And luxurious fabric, Allison Herman.
The kimonos.
Welcome to Extra Hot Grave for the 5,000th time. No, 500th. I got my numbers mixed up. 500th episode. Pew, 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 pew. Welcome, everybody. Thank you for being here, joining us for this August 5-somethingth episode. She is a TV critic of Variety. You've heard with us before. Welcome back, Allison Herman.
Allison.
Yay!
An honor and a privilege.
We're thrilled to have you to talk about Shogun, in which it is 1600. Portuguese explorers have located Japan, made inroads with residents for the purposes of trade, and converted a significant portion of them to Catholicism. But they've also kept Japan's location from other Western nations. An English pilot and Protestant, John Blackthorne, played by Cosmo Jarvis, strenuously objects. He manages to get his ship to Japan before all of his fellow sailors are dead of starvation, scurvy, or in the case of the captain, suicide. But he also arrives in a period of unrest. Last Shogun died, leaving an heir who was too young to succeed him. And while leadership is now shared among a council of regents, they do not all get along. Lords Yoshii Toranaga, Hiroyuki Sanada, and Ishido Kazunari, Takahiro Hira, both see ways they can use Blackthorne to further their own ends. The show is co-created by Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo. Past and future podcast guest Emily Yoshida is also staff writer. We will still be objective. The first two episodes dropped on Hulu in the morning, aired on FX in the evening of February 27th. We got the whole season, but we will be careful about spoilers. Let us do the Chen check-in. Allison, should our listeners watch Shogun?
Absolutely.
Sarah?
Yeah, I think so.
Dave?
Yes.
I agree as well. Let's get into it. Allison, you reviewed the show for Variety. We'll link it in the show notes. You wrote about how immersive it is. You also already mentioned the luxurious fabric in your intro, but talk a little more about that, how it is an immersive viewing experience.
Yeah, one of the things I brought up in my review, or I've just brought up when discussing this show, is it is expensive television that actually like looks and feels expensive. I cannot count the number of shows in recent years where you hear that it costs $200 million and you're like, how?
Where
did the money go? I don't see it. Mm-hmm. And you absolutely see the money, and that takes you to 17th century Japan. You are in palaces, you see big cityscapes, you in the tiniest details of what people are wearing and the context that they're in. You don't have that kind of break with reality you can sometimes have when you're looking at a very like unconvincing recreation of the past.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it's not enough for a show to just look expensive. I think the show also does a great job in terms of like the exposition of explaining to you pretty quickly what is going on in this world, which is no easy feat because, you know, you touched on it in your introduction. There's interfaith tensions between Catholics and Protestants. There's international tensions. There's, you know, the brink of a civil war within Japan that has 5 separate factions and counting, and people who are in ambiguous spaces between the various sides. And the fact that I wasn't like completely at sea, I think, is a real testament to how Marks and Kondo take James Clavell's novel and really like faithfully and thoughtfully translate it to the screen in a way that is clearly like very difficult, and in fact took FX 11 years to do, but it was worth it.
Well, the book is like 1,200 pages long, right?
Yeah, it's a real doorstopper.
It's a chonky boy.
Oh, Clavels. Yeah, listeners of a certain age, their parents absolutely had that at eye level in the den, sometimes with evidence that they had gotten to page 200 and they're like, you know what?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For the record, I've read zero pages of this novel. And I, again, like I came into Game of Thrones, a show that I compare to this a lot as a book reader. And I had a lot of appreciation for how it was able to take the very complicated and very long story of that book and translate it to the screen. And in this way, it's almost the opposite where I'm like, I don't have the crutch of like actually knowing who all these people are going in.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel like I needed an extra textual guide.
Mm-hmm. I'm old enough to remember when a new miniseries on television would make the world stop rotating so that everybody could watch. And we're all starved for entertainment back then. So when there was something with dudes with swords, I'm like, obviously this is for me. And I started watching, you know, I'm like, whatever, 4, 5, 6. But now, totally in the bag for it. So.
Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot fewer beheadings on network TV back then.
Yeah.
More's the pity. Mm-hmm.
Well, Sarah, you're a costume head as well, so I'll go to you about how did you also find it as immersive as Allison did?
I did, to my surprise. Like, usually I'm initially resistant to this kind of costume drama because I have been conditioned to expect the Apple TV Plus version of This Is Obviously Expensive, in which, like, that's kind of all it is them showing you where the money went. And it's like, okay, that's not, you know, diverting, but it's not enough. So this, I was surprised at how economical and often elegant the exposition was, especially since in a lot of the scenes, I am not a Japanese speaker, so I'm reading along the subtitles with most of the rest of the audience. And it still felt very organic. And so I liked that. Sanada also, like, I love him even when he's in, like, English language properties where it's clear that he just learned it phonetically because it's terrible. See Helix. But it's amazing. Like, this guy is, I think, a greatly admired thespian, and I never saw it before. And it's like, oh, okay, got it. I see. Like, he's extremely charismatic, but once he's sort of in a language that he can control better, that is, and also with decent writing.
Yeah.
Let's not forget. That's really good. There were scenes that I was like, this, like, language barrier, like, sequence in the opener is going on a little bit too long, but occasionally it would zig where I was expecting it to zag. It has a good internal sense of its own timing and when to go back and forth between different factions or drama, like sub-dramas. You see where the money went, but it's not standing back all, this is our accounting from wardrobe. It's really dedicated to making the story clear, but also pacing it well. It's good. And it feels like you're learning stuff. But not homeworky, which is also, like, you can feel smug about watching it. I don't know.
I was really impressed by how well some of the performances came across, even though they were not in a language I could immediately understand. I actually think my favorite performance of the whole show is, who is the actor who plays Lord Yabushige? He's one of Torunaga's kind of vassal lords.
Yeah, I'll look it up.
Asano, I think his name is. I was also impressed by him and his permanently disgusted face. Is that the guy you're talking about?
Yeah. I mean, he's this amazing character because you meet him as kind of a generically menacing warlord type, and then you start to understand the nuances in this character. He becomes kind of a comic figure and sort of hapless, but also has a lot of pathos to him, and also just really... I mean, again, to go back to the Game of Thrones comparison, like, the thing that made that show click for me is that there are all these characters who don't fit into easy categories of hero, villain, protagonist, antagonist, and they just come across like complicated people. And both that character as written on the page by Marks and Kondo and their collaborators, and that character as brought to life by that performance, even though, again, I'm not someone who can immediately access that performance in terms of language, I was just so delighted by what I saw.
I think another comparison would be Rome, which I thought it was very similar to. Now in Rome, they're mostly Romans, but Titus Pullo is basically Blackthorn.
Mm-hmm.
Insofar, they doesn't belong into the power structure. He is trying to make his way through the best he can. And a lot of times the best he can is to put his head against other people's heads. So I felt a similarity there. One of my issues usually with an historical drama is it falls into the trap that history places for us, which is most of the history written about any period of time before, let's say, the 20th century, doesn't really give a lick about just the people that make the world actually work. It's just like the higher echelons. And so you have this sort of like blinders on, and it's sometimes really hard to write that back into your story. Rome did it really well. I felt the first episode of this, or the first bit of the first episode of this, I was a little worried about that, and it was going to be one of those stodgy interpretations.
Totally.
But then, as Blackthorn gets into Japan proper, then that opens up. So, you know, it's a storytelling device, I feel, in the first episode that they revealed slowly and to effect. But it had me worried for a second. But then I thought, okay, well, we're in good hands. And just before I forget, Sarah mentioned the subtitles. I do want to give a shout out to the Star Wars fan who was doing the subtitles in Shogun, because it is the exact same size and font from the original Star Wars when they're doing hard-coded subtitles still. Good old Franklin Gothic demi-condensed. Good choice, my man.
Tadanobu Asano is the actor who plays Yabushige.
That said,
yeah,
where did the character that wanted to boil people alive to observe the moment of death go in the episodes after? Like, I felt like that was something that they put in there as a marker for this character. And granted, I'm not all the way to the end yet, but I didn't see that sort of revisited. That part of his personality seemed to have dropped away after that.
I think it's always kind of there. It's like a latent, like you've established that this person is capable of brutality. And once you have that baseline, you get to watch him in more like political survival mode. But, you know, not to spoil the end, but the violence comes back around with this character a little bit, I would say.
Since you brought it up, getting boiled alive seems bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, volunteering your whole family, including your infant, for seppuku also seems bad.
Yeah, some pretty harsh shit to start this series off, for sure. Yeah,
but then at the same time, there's like lines like, "Sorry about your sack of shit, Lord," which I like wrote down because the delivery on it was so... it was just so good. And I think that that speaks to what Allison was saying about this more dimensionalized, like not black and white idea of the people in the story, and also sort of historically. Like Dave was saying, that it's not just little armies moving around like a flat risk board on your in your living room. It's, you know, these were people and families. And I think that it does that really well, but without being like, look how well we're doing this, which sometimes Game of Thrones, I thought, did.
Yeah, one of those moments for me was early in the premiere when, you know, we have all of the regents sitting down together and Toranaga saying he can't wait for the heir to come of age because these meetings are exhausting because some things are universal and never change. Like,
this meeting could have been an email. Says.
I said this meeting could have been a pigeon.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very immersive, like not just aesthetically or anything like that, but also just morally. Like I thought it did a really good job of being like, this society is very different from our own in a very extreme way, and not just like distance wise, just temporally. Like I don't think either side of the Blackthorn Japanese divide comes off, you know, you heard the bathing clip, like neither side of those really adheres to modern standards.
Sure.
I think the show did a really good job of like explaining to you how the society works, not in a gawking way, but in a like, it helps you understand why these characters and the historical figures that they're based on like make the decisions that they make in a way that's not like judgmental or leery. Yeah. It really works.
Yes. And I think that was a great point in your review as well, where it's like there's you can imagine a version of this where it's like, we're just going to have seppuku happen off screen. It's or we're just going to mention it and then we'll never hear about it again. And this is like, no, you can't take those things out. Those are part of this story, even though they're, you know, obviously hard to watch. It's also fascinating to see how people, I was saying this to Dave last night because we watched some more past the first two, but how people in an honor-based leadership structure, how to like have to figure out like passive aggressive workarounds for each other's maneuvers. So they're like still technically honorable. Like, oh no, your guy was ambushed by bandits. Bandits I hired, but no one needs to know the part. Like I enjoy that aspect of it too. Like there's aggression as well, but yeah. Also
mm-hmm. The fine art of being a little bitch sometimes.
Yeah, like, you know, the Game of Thrones comparison, I think, is also great. But then I've seen the creators quoted in interviews and stuff saying, like, it's really more like Succession. And like Dave and I just finished watching Larry Sanders through again. It's like, there's some of that in there as well. Like, there's a lot of sort of, again, some power structures never really change either, even if you're in a situation where, like, it's not acceptable to cut your opponent's head off, I guess.
I mean, I had a couple of Sopranos thoughts in my notes as well, because I think there's a scene in the premiere where he's like, oh, I had everything brought ashore in this my fief where this ship came ashore, and the other guy's like dot dot dot, and he's like, because I wanted it to be a surprise gift for you. Psych, I didn't want that at all, but I also don't want to be beheaded in front mm-hmm. of everybody, so
yeah.
Take it, I guess. And, like, everybody is literally, like, eye roll emojis or, like, circling their heads, and it's like, well, yeah. Corporate culture.
Mm, so true. Mm-hmm. All right, any final thoughts before we move on? Allison?
No, you should watch it so FX recoups their investment, because they clearly invested a lot.
Yeah, they did. Wisely, I would say.
I would say so, too. I hope this is big.
It is time to go around the dial. First stop, Tara.
Hello. First, I have a correction from my around the dial, which is now from 2 weeks ago. Luke and Margie were the first team with a deaf member on The Amazing Race. I actually watched that season and I forgot, so I regret the error. Thank you to Sweet Pea Pink on Discord for the correction. I am actually, though, here mostly to talk about Abbott Elementary, because it's back. It's 4 episodes in at this point. And early in the season 3 premiere, we are told the reason for the long gap between seasons is that the documentary crew turned down the wrong street and got their equipment stolen. And 5 months is how long it takes people with arts degrees to scrape together the money to replace it, according to Ava. Rough, but true. However, that was pretty much the last harsh thing to happen, I think, in the first 3 episodes. Janine gets recruited for a job at the district, which I would say is an obvious pretext for her to spend more time with a colleague there named Manny. And since he is played by Josh Segarra from the other two, and we have all seen TV before, it seems like he's being set up to be an obstacle between Janine and Gregory, except Janine and Manny have already been working together off screen for 5 months, and apparently nothing has happened. So my much darker theory is that because he seems too good to be true so far, he probably is, but we just don't know how yet. I am just saying, he wears a gold chain outside of his turtleneck, and I will move on from there. But it seems like he's a smooth smoothie of some stripe. And I kind of hope I'm right, because it seems like the show is losing the little edge that it had and is going full Parks and Rec, which maybe that's a good thing for, you know, you, and that's fine. The centerpiece of the premiere was a Zoom call from Philadelphia Eagle Jalen Hurts, which was, you know, he was cute, not good at acting. And then a couple of more Eagles joined him for this pre-tape that none of them were great in. Coverage around the premiere said that they asked to be on the show because they're fans, which is lovely. But does having them on make sense in this world? Does it progress the story the show's trying to tell?
Isn't it kind of weird to think, like, how much TV has evolved since the 70s, but having sports people come on your show is an instant yes, and it's never really super great, you know? Mm-mm. It's kind of funny how that works.
No. I always think of the moment in Extras on the where the whistle blows, where it's like, Chris Martin, it's crazy that you're here. It's like, 'cause they made them take his cameo. Anyway. Janine and Gregory keep missing their connection to get together, but, you know, there haven't been any new people in the interim. They're still good friends. Is this interesting? Like, even when Melissa rejects a marriage proposal from her boyfriend, he just sort of evaporates. And I think it was Dave who predicted that they would neuter Ava before long. And he's right. She is mostly trying to be a good principal now, kind of. And I've liked feel-good comedies. I'm not saying I need people to be mean to each other in every single show I watch, but there seems to be an outside concern about making Abbott Elementary nice that is keeping it from being funny or real. And I won't say more because everyone's entitled to the comfort watch that speaks to their heart. But it might be drifting into not for me territory. Time will tell. For my plugs, Late Night with Seth Meyers turned 10 years old on Saturday. And I interviewed Sal Gentile, who writes the segment A Closer Look, partly as a celebration of that, even though the segment started in 2015. Doesn't matter. So you can read that at Cracked. And I also reviewed the second best hospital in the galaxy, a new Prime Video show, and is not second best anything. It was very bad. I hated it. So you can read that review at Cracked as well. We'll link those both in the show notes.
All right, Allison, what have you been watching recently?
I have been watching the second season of Tokyo Vice, speaking about shows about white people in Japan. Although the second season is less about that, which is one of the things I really admire. So for those unfamiliar, Tokyo Vice is based on a memoir of the same name by a journalist named Jake Adelstein, who moved to Tokyo in the 1990s when there was much less infrastructure around being an English-speaking expat and got a job at a like Japanese language newspaper, which is incredibly hard to do because it's Japan. So obviously you have to take some insane entrance exam to be a reporter. Like, those are related skills. Ansel Elgort plays the lead. Michael Mann directed the pilot. It's shot in Tokyo. So there is, sort of similar to Shogun, a lot of obvious expense and really well-considered period detail. But it is also just really good at being a slice of life show about what it's like to work and live at various fringes of the Tokyo economy. I really love the way the show depicts being in the Yakuza, where there are outbursts of violence occasionally, but mostly it's kind of about the internal politics and the day-to-day and the internal power structures. And they also dive into the world of hostess bars, which is a sort of adjacent to sex work, but not sex work occupation, where you entertain someone usually a businessman platonically at a bar. And Rachel Keller works, the actress, plays a woman who works in that world. And this first season was 8 episodes. It was phenomenal. The second season just returned. I feel the need to advocate for it because Max has been running through all of its originals in their second season, like The Grim Reaper, RIP Rap Shit, RIP Julia.
Yeah.
And even though they expanded this from 8 to 10 hours in the second season, which on some level is a vote of confidence, I am just very worried. When I shared my review, a lot of people were like, oh my God, I love the first season. I didn't know it was back. So I feel the need to praise it again. And the second season does that sort of wonderful TV thing, almost like The Bear, where you have this, your entrance into this world being Ansel Elgort and Rachel Keller's characters. But in the second season, it's much more of a broader ensemble that just happens to feature them, and certain, you know, peripheral characters get fleshed out and get stories of their own. Ansel Elgort's coworker at the newspaper gets a storyline this year about being a like semi-closeted gay man in Tokyo at the turn of the millennium, which is just fascinating in its own right. You meet new characters, and I just hope the show gets the opportunity to keep expanding because it shows such a like rich and nuanced understanding of the world it has decided to present to us. And I just, it's like a weird comfort watch where I can just throw it in and feel like I'm totally absorbed for a full hour, but also not necessarily like using as much of my brain as I would for something like Succession. It's like this bizarre combo of like popcorn TV, but also like genuinely stimulating. And I encourage everyone to check it out. So that's season 2 of Tokyo Vice.
I'm not saying that I have led a sheltered life, but when you said hostess bar, I really thought the next word out of your mouth was going to be Twinkie.
No, the Laura Linney Law and Order episode, Dave. Come on.
Uh-huh.
You know this one. You do.
I don't.
No, you don't.
And what do you want to plug? We'll link to your page at Variety, but anything in particular that you've covered lately?
No, so my Shogun review published yesterday on Monday, and yeah, just generally my coverage at Variety, some reviews, some columns, some interviews, a little bit of everything.
Ooh. Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, I'm here to talk about True D. By that, I mean True Detective, colon, Night Country. I know it's a little late, but you know, I think people are still talking about it and working through some things with the recently concluded season. I felt about the finale the way I felt about the season as a whole, namely that I liked the actors and what they were doing. I loved Callie Race and Finn Bennett especially. I liked what the whole cast brought to characters that could on paper feel a little on paper at times. Jodie Foster's Liz Danvers in particular could seem like a thought experiment about what if Clarice Starling but Jane Tennyson? Like, okay. But I liked what she did with it. I felt that it was dimensional, not too that thing that TV writers sometimes do when they're like, well, if we want a woman protagonist to be like prickly and dimensional, that means she has to be dude-ish. And they didn't do that, which I appreciated. And parts of the finale were quite moving, I thought, when Nefaro finally gets her name, for instance. I was like, I thought it was just breathtaking, the way that they shot that, the way that she acted it and didn't overact it. But the finale also felt rushed and slowed down by its own self-importance at the same time. And that was kind of the whole season also, and kind of the show, including the first season, which like I also loved it and was caught up in all of that Times of Flat Circle stuff. But that chasing of the season one zeitgeist dragon is better controlled here than in previous iterations, but it's still like, just call it Night Country and leave it out with the True Detective branding. Maybe my husband halfway through the season was like, I hate this, but I'm also intrigued. And I can't really argue with that. Like, I didn't hate it, but I came out at roughly the same place in that it did some things extremely well and created some beautiful moments, but net, it isn't exactly good. And the ending is like, you had zero problem busting out a talking non-villain to wrap up the season's major case. So just tell us what we're seeing at the very end. Also, in case this gets like canceled again, or Nick Pizzolatto decides to set fire to HBO's corporate offices, like, just tell us what we're seeing. Finally, guys, you're naming the dead child of a Jodie Foster character Holden. That's what you're doing. Okay. No notes, I guess. It's too late. Wild decision. Okay, so for my plug, speaking of True Detective, it once upon a time was also and only a legendary true crime pulp magazine. It has gone through many iterations over the last 70 or 80 years and published many compendia of its articles. I carry most of them at my true crime bookshop. That's Exhibit B Books. And you can find that at exhibitbbooks.com.
All right, here's what's coming up on Extra, Extra Hot, Great this Friday. Yes, we are covering Deal or No Deal Island. It's like Deal or No Deal, but there's an island involved. I assume it's like Lost. And then a very special bonus episode for our club members. Next Tuesday, it's the first of 2004's Three of These series from Sarah. Sarah, what's in store for Three of These this year in general and this episode in particular?
Well, in general, we are doing Quentin Tarantino on the small screen. And next episode in particular, because we're going in chronological order, we are beginning with the episode of ER that he famously directed in that show's first season. From there, we'll go on to his Thespionics on Alias, and finally his CSI Original Flavor episode, the finale that he directed. So Quentin Tarantino on the small screen, starting when it was still like unprestige-y to do that, and winding up at the Jewel in CBS's Procedural Crown. So yeah, join us. We would love to hear what you think of those efforts coming from a different time in television history.
And then right here next week, we welcome back Adam Grossworth to talk about Elsbeth, the spinoff of the spinoff in the Good X series.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hi, Extra Hot Great friends. This is Francoise, and today I'm nominating Better Things, Season 2, Episode 2, Rising for the canon. I watched all of Better Things when my son was about a year old, and I say not so jokingly that I learned everything I'll ever need to know about being a great parent from Pamela Adlon's character, Sam Fox. This whole series is such a beautiful, tender exploration of the pains and pleasures of parenting with such a deep, raw love as its foundation. This episode perfectly balances the push and pull of parenting. The first half of this episode is not about parenting, however. It's about the delicate dance women are supposed to do around men. 3 months before the New Yorker short story Cat Person took over the internet, and men, like, learned that women sometimes have sex with good guys just to be nice, Pam Adlon was out here speaking truths. Play clip one.
All I want to know is what you feel about me.
You
want to
know how I feel about you? Boo. Boo on you. Bad job. Bad job. You're no fun. You're no fun. Oh, God. I've hated you since the first minute of our first date. And I've been dating you for 3 weeks. That is how nice I am.
It's both fun and cathartic, and bless that woman who starts applauding Sam at the end of her speech. But all of that is appetizer. The main course of this episode is the truly special part. Sam is going on a girls' trip to Santa Barbara. And at first, that requires logistics. Three kids, three different places, tending to their needs, reassuring them. It's exhausting. She finally joins her girlfriends on the tarmac. Her best friend, Sunny, has started dating some super rich dude with a villa in Santa Barbara, and he sent his private jet up to LA to bring the girls up for a fancy weekend. Everyone is dressed in white, so you know it's going to be luxurious. On the plane, Sam is free of kids and ready to have fun. Play clip two.
Hello, what?
Mom, Bottle just told me they're fasting this weekend. They're not even going to feed me.
Please just let me stay in my own house.
Frankie, give me a break. I had to find some place to put all you guys for the weekend, okay? I'm on the plane. I'll call you when we land.
Is that Frankie?
Yes, sorry.
Give me the phone.
Oh,
boy.
Okay.
All right. Yes. Hey, Frankie. It's Aunt Sun. Listen, your mom's on a trip now, okay? She is officially on a trip, so you can't talk to her anymore. So just be a big girl and put your big boy pants on and figure your stuff out, okay?
Okay, love you. Thank you.
Nice.
Two days without kids.
Yes!
Freedom, fun, it's the thing every overextended, overstimulated mom wants. All we dream about is having fun with our adult friends, tending those friendships, drinking champagne, being pampered for a minute, right? But then when it actually happens, when the girls pull up and there's a mariachi band and a waitstaff bringing out drinks and more people dressed in white and maybe even a romantic setup in the mix, nope. Sam's got to get out of there. It's too much. It's too overwhelming. It's actually not what she wants. No, what she wants is some alone time by herself at the beach. She gets the golf cart driver to drop her off at a low-budget motel. And by the way, giving him a big hug and congratulating him on the baby on the way is this tiny glimpse into Sam's big-heartedness that she spent the entire drive to the motel becoming the driver's best friend and closest confidant. When she's there, she buys herself a bottle of wine, some roasted vegetables from the deli counter, and she stares into the ocean. Ah, silence. Alone time. It's what every overextended, overstimulated mom wants, right? But then she longs for her children. We see her renting a car, driving back down to LA, collecting each daughter, driving back up with them to Santa Barbara. They play on the beach and Sam watches over them lovingly, so proud and awed of the people that she birthed and nurtured. Enjoying your kids' company, making memories, spending quality time with them. It's what every overextended, overstimulated mom wants, right? But then we cut back to Sam gazing at the beach. Is that a flash forward that will really happen? Or just a passing idea that will never come to fruition? It's a perfect representation of the conundrum of parenting. When we're in it, all we want to be is out of it. And when we're out of it, all we want to do is spend time with our kids. So for getting at an essential truth and for showing it with such beauty, empathy, and love, I hope you'll vote to induct this perfect little episode of Better Things into the canon.
Thank you, Francoise. Allison, you chose this from our list. Please start us off.
I love Better Things. I think an interesting thing about this episode is that it was written by Louis C.K.
Yeah, I noted that as well.
Yeah, who is a major force behind the series. And the way I've always understood Better Things, which this episode came out also in 2017. So like literally just a few months before the C.K. revelations would come out via the New York Times. And Better Things to me has always been in such fascinating conversation with Louis. Obviously, Louis C.K.'s own show that he, you know, wrote, directed, started, edited, etc. Both in that, like, he created the model for this kind of show that was like lower budget, but has more creative control for the comedian or whoever is in the driver's seat. But also, Louis is also a show about a single parent of multiple kids navigating their post-divorce middle age and the way it has made them think differently about their children and their lives and how they spend their time. And in Louis, it's this like incredibly destabilizing thing that maroons Louis and makes him just permanently at sea in this like Schlemiel figure. Better Things, I've always thought of as this like beautiful inverse to it, where like what Sam finds in her divorce life is much closer to like self-actualization and fulfillment. And she's much more, you know, in control of like what she wants. She has no, she's no problem communicating with this guy. I am not interested in you in any deeper way. I'm going to break this off because I don't really fundamentally need this. And also, you know, her relationship with her daughters is totally harrowing in some ways. And she has to like reassure one daughter that the grandma isn't going to die and tell the other daughter that she needs to figure out how to feed herself and drop off another daughter with her friend's ex-husband, which is in itself kind of weird. But, you know, she has like a much more warm and fulfilling relationship with parenting that I think that earlier show did. And this episode really exemplifies that in that, yes, it's ambivalent. Yes, it has a lot of things that are very unique to working single motherhood in terms of like never feeling like you're doing it right or you can fully commit to any one direction. But it's always filled with this, you know, confidence that stems from Pamela Adlon that I've always really admired. Also, shout out to Santa Barbara. I grew up in San Diego and I never understood what people saw in it until I visited Santa Barbara and was like, oh, beach communities. Very nice.
I'll go next. I think what Francoise described as roasted vegetables from the deli, I'm pretty sure that's Mexican fruit salad with like tahini on it. Allison, you're the foodie. What did you think?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it.
Not that it matters. Just a note. I'll start with what I liked first. Alicia Reiner as Sunny. Where's the star vehicle? I love her so much. She's been in so many amazing things. Never as the star. Great in Orange is the New Black as a truly horrible character. Great in The Deuce. Like, just great every time I see her. Great greatness. Playing a character who named her child Sorrow and still is somehow okay with me. So that's notable. I'm also not sure how low budget that hotel is. It looked pretty nice when we got in the room. I agree about the parenting, even though I'm not a parent. And I agree with Allison that sometimes it's like that part of it is hard to watch. I'm surprised to hear a parent be like, it was so affirming. Like, maybe it's just because it could get worse if your baby is a, you know, baby. And then you're seeing these teenagers. It's like, well, at least I'm not fucking there yet, because her kids are such dicks to her, like all the time. They really, I admire the lack of vanity of just portraying these children as like true terrors sometimes, but they are all just absolutely monsters. And, you know, I guess sorry to my parents, because so was I probably. I saw the Louis C.K. credit. I'm not surprised that Francoise didn't mention that. Maybe she didn't notice. And I was, you know, willing to sort of like try to put that aside. And then in the first segment, this guy, whose name I think is John Ailes, playing Rodney, Sam's date, is doing like a full Louis C.K. impression, like talking exactly like him. All of his speaking cadences are exactly like that. And I didn't, you know, how could I know if he was directed to do that or if that was a choice? But it took me out of it so much. I found that tough. And I agree with Allison that like the two shows are in conversation, especially since I feel like Better Things premiered like maybe the year after there was the arc on Louis where he comes on to her and they're almost having sex, and then it gets into like an area. I won't get into specifics because I don't want to have to do a retroactive content warning, but retroactive content warning because it needed it. It was like really ambiguous, and I still don't know how that show felt about it. And to me, this was like his penance for that was helping her get this show made. And if so, great. I also noted that Francoise cut off the clip of her like reading him to filth in the parking lot before she starts calling him a woman repeatedly for having feelings. And that left a bad taste in my mouth, too. So I do think there are great things to say about this episode. I don't know if this is one I would necessarily support inducting. Sarah?
Yeah, I'm not grounded in the show the way other panelists are, but I just kept thinking, like, based on the second half of the episode, and there's a certain opacity to Pamela Adlon's performance when she's sort of staring out to sea that I think is really striking. And I thought that sequence was beautiful and sort of bittersweet. That's tiny canon shit. That it's like, how is the acting on the sort of bookending a dream sequence? Like, yes, let's get some tiny canon nominees for that. But the first half of it, leaving aside the content and Sam just slagging this guy in his fucking stupid jazz hat as a lady for having feelings, it was like a beat behind itself. Like, tighten it up in the editing, get people to jump each other's lines. This is supposed to be a comedy. Like, I know it's an awkward comedy, but the pacing should not be off. Like, it's not creating awkwardness. It's just too slow. So that was an issue. The kids are kind of dicks, but not as much as I've seen in previous episodes of this that I've watched. Like Tara said, like, there were moments that I enjoyed and that I admired, but until I got to the second half, I didn't really understand what the argument was going to be for the canon, and I think the presentation is great, even if it's not an experience that some of the panelists share. That's okay. I was willing to be talked into it, but I just think the episode as a whole is not quite good enough. Tiny canon for a couple of these moments, absolutely, but net, it's not even a bad taste. It was just like a B minus until the end, and the average didn't net out for me.
Let's put this to the official vote. Allison, canon worthy or not, what say you?
Apparently an unpopular opinion, but I say yes.
Tara?
No, but thank you for the submission.
Sarah?
I did like the submission, but the episode, not canon worthy to me. Sorry.
So that means, unfortunately, that Better Things, Season 2, Episode 2, Rising, you are hereby not inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
Sarah has this week's winner.
My winner is the Saturday Night Live band member who very noticeably glared her way through Shane Gillis's very shitty monologue. That redhead behind him was not having it. I mean, no one in the band was, I didn't think, but she especially was trying to set him on fire with her mind, and I'm here for it.
Yeah, not even a return officially, because he was hired and then never got started because he was too offensive, but I guess all that is forgotten.
Oh, right, I forgot.
And apparently, there was also a shot of him at the end where it's like, goodbye, and the whole rest of the cast seemed like they were 10 feet behind him, which was crazy. Anyway, relatedly, our loser of the week is Netflix, because Shane Gillis self-financed a sitcom called Tires, and Netflix bought it and is going to be premiering it in May. So cancellation is not real, and everyone can shut up about cancel culture, please.
Mm. Yeah, no thanks.
You want no thanks, you know what time it is.
It's done.
Daytime.
All right, welcome back to Game Time. This is the fourth game of the season. Tara has 2 points. Sarah has 1 point. Value guests looking to get on the board today. And today we are playing the one with the canon episodes from Catherine, who earns herself an extra credit topic of her choosing, plus a free shirt from our store at throughmethods.com. This game tests your knowledge of quality TV episodes through the filter of EHG's own canon segment
by daring to ask, what if episodes in the canon were titled like episodes of Friends? On each contestant's turn, I will read you a Friends-style title, beginning with the one with or the one where, befitting a particular episode that has been voted into the canon. For 2 points, you have to name the TV series the episode is from. As a hint, I can give you the network and year on which the episode was originally released, but then the show title is worth only 1 point. Although these are all pretty gettable, I'm going to level the playing field a little bit by giving Allison 2 free clues. So the first time she uses those hints, she can still get full point value. So it's basically okay. 2 free hints. You use them, you still guess it, you're going to get 2 points for not being here every week with us. And frankly, shame on you for not being here every week with us. No TV series will appear more than once in the answers. Steel meal situation, please start, Ariana.
Thank you, Dave. Sarah has 2. I have 5. Value Guess has 4 plus Eric's meal, so a total of 5. So if you want to use that steel meal, if one of the rest of us misses our question, you can say steel meal and jump in and steal the points.
Yes. You only get 1 guess, so make it count. Let's throw it to Picky to see who's going first.
We will start with Valued Guest.
All right, Allison's in the hot seat, going first, just the way she likes it. She said before we started the show, she's going to win.
I'm going to bury
she
you
always
both.
Wins.
There's a lot of trash talk.
Everybody's going to get 0 points.
I definitely said that. I said exactly that.
Bike racks, 3 o'clock, whole bit.
Oh, yeah. Boil you in oil, etc.
All right, so to remind you, I'm going to give you the episode synopsis recontextualized as a Friends title. You name the show. The one where that old nerd's glasses break. The one where that old nerd's glasses break. Now, you can try to name it right away, or you can ask for a hint.
I'll ask for a hint. Why not?
This show debuted CBS 1959.
Oh, this is not going to be pretty. I'm just going to guess the Twilight Zone.
Twilight Zone is in fact correct. That is worth 2 points.
There we go.
You have used one of your super hints, but you still get 2 points. Well done. Sarah D. Bunting. The one where we thank the ants. Thance.
What the fuck is the name of this show? So, I don't, is it a closer look?
So close.
Incorrect. We were looking for Look Around You from BBC Two, 2002.
Ooh.
Never heard of this, Allison? You're shaking your head.
Oh.
Nope. I'm just going to out myself.
It's great.
It's one of the fringe candidate entries for sure. But if you like educational films of yore from your school days, you definitely should check out Look Around You. Yeah. All right, Tara.
Yes.
The one that's basically a proof of concept for I Think You Should Leave.
The Characters.
The Characters is correct. Netflix 2016 show. Back to Allison. The one with the English trifle.
The Great British Baking Show?
Incorrect. There was a little meta answer there. That was Friends, recontextualized as Friends. That was the one where Ross gets high. That was the one where Rachel makes the English trifle with the meat.
Yep.
Sarah, the one where Mabel loves waddles.
Hint, please.
Disney Channel, 2012. Mentioned very recently on this very podcast here.
Oh, right.
The one where Mabel loves waddles. From a Disney Channel show.
The Aristocrats. I don't know the answer to this.
That is from the Time Traveler's Pig episode of Gravity Falls. Gravity Falls. Tara.
Yeah.
The one where she comes out to Laura Dern.
Ellen.
Ellen is correct. Allison. The one with the George Foreman grill.
Seinfeld?
Seinfeld, no, incorrect. Same network, NBC, from 2006, that was The Office. The Office, the episode is The Injury. Back to Sarah. The one where we were all rooting for you.
Oh, America's Next Top Model.
Tara.
Yes.
The one where Neil's dad is having an affair.
The In-Betweeners? Shit.
Incorrect.
Ah, oh, I just Steel realized
meal?
What it was.
Steel
yes.
Meal from Sarah.
Freaks and Geeks?
Freaks and Geeks. Freaks the Garage Geeks. Door episode, correct.
Neil's father's never having an affair.
Do I get two for that?
Yes. You get, yep, you got two. 2 points steal. Allison, the one where Kimberly takes her wig, question marks?
The one where Kimberly takes her
wig? Yeah, the one where Kimberly Put takes her wig off.
Yeah.
Oh, takes her wig off.
Yeah.
RuPaul's Drag Race.
Good guess.
Incorrect. We were looking for Melrose Place. Melrose Place from 1994. Sarah, the one with the free cheese t-shirts.
Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends?
Close.
That's what I would have said too.
So close, guys. Reservation Dogs.
Oh,
yes. Well,
yes.
Oh, right. Shit.
Yes.
Stay
yes.
Gold Cheesy Wrong Boys. Cheese. Back to Tara.
Yeah.
The one with yummy tears of unfathomable sadness.
Hint?
Comedy Central 2001.
Oh, is it South Park?
It is South Park. It's Scott Tenorman Must Die episode of South Park. Back to Allison. The one where that little girl kicks his ass in an amazing fight scene.
Barry.
Barry is
Hell
correct.
Yeah.
Quick answer, 2 points.
Quick and confident.
Sarah D. Bunting. The one where Patrick sings to David.
SpongeBob SquarePants.
Allison's jumping in with the steel meal.
Can
I think.
Steel meal? That's Schitt's Creek.
Schitt's Creek, 2 points steal.
Sure
nicely
is.
Done.
Yes.
This will take us into our score break, Tara.
Yep.
It is for you.
Mm-hmm.
The one where Hank gets shot.
Oh, is this the Venture Brothers? Shit.
It is not. Allison, another steal from
meal.
Allison.
Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad, yes.
God
1 minute.
Damn.
Breaking
Good one.
Bad is the answer. And Allison's just racking up them steel meal points. Tara, let's get the scores.
I realized that I was giving Allison's points to Sarah, so I'm sorry. Sarah, confirm, please fact check me.
4 points difference.
Yes. I currently have Allison with 8, me with 5, Sarah with 4. Sarah, does that conform to your...
That's what I have,
Thank
too.
You so much.
Fantastic. All right, so who was in last place after all
Sarah
that?
Sarah D. Bunting.
Sarah D. Bunting, you're in the Ghostworth Challenge Equalized... Ghostworth, you're in that thing.
Yep.
Grossworth Equalizer Challenge Zone.
That's right.
Do you know what box you want, Sarah?
That's what she said. Is there just a the $100,000 box? Anyone who knows that reference at me? 90s, I guess? I don't know.
90s it is. Remind you, with the 90s, you get the additional information of what year the question is about. So that's exciting.
Does she get 2 or 4 if she...
Let's see. What do we got? We got 2. So let's say we're going to go for... let's do 2 and 4. 2 and 4 sounds good. What TV show kept his title character Chase until she fell for a mountain man named Byron Sully? Byron Sully. Mountain man.
The Kennebunkport Sullies?
No, the Mountain Sullies.
The Mount Katahdin Sullies? Byron Sully. The Aristocrats. I don't know.
Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman.
Oh.
What role did Courtney Cox originally try out for on Friends?
Rachel?
Correct. Sorry, that was also 94. Doesn't matter, you got the answer right. All right, also 1994. For some reason, we're grouping the 94 questions here in the box. What series boasted TV's first black superhero, a scientist enhanced by a mechanically augmented neurotransmitter interactive system? What series boasted TV's first black superhero, a scientist enhanced by a mechanically augmented neurotransmitter interactive system?
Interactive system. I mean, this is not correct, but Star Trek The Next Generation?
Incorrect. Mechanically augmented neurotransmitter interactive system, or Mantis.
Oh.
You need 2 of these last 3, Sarah. 1993. What cop drama starred Amy Brennerman's Bear Behind on its premiere episode?
NYPD Blue.
Yeah, bare asses. It's got to be. All right. Let's see. 1993 again. Get this and you got your 2 points. What MTV twosome wears t-shirts honoring AC/DC and Metallica?
Beavis and Butthead.
You are correct, and there are your points. So quickly, let's get the must-get-it scores.
Okay, I have 5. Sarah now has 6. Allison still in the lead with 8.
All right.
Woo.
We are halfway done, half the game to go. Let's get back into it. To remind you, I'm giving you a Canon inductee synopsis, recontextualized as a Friends-style title. You give me the show we're talking about. To Allison, the one with the regular human bartender. The one with the regular human bartender.
What We Do in the Shadows?
Yes, correct. On the Run is that episode. Sarah D. Bunting, this is question 17.
Spread Eagle.
The one where they all visit Ruth in the hospital.
Is it Ruth in the hospital?
Ruth.
Hint, please.
Netflix, 2018.
Oh, that's not what I thought at all.
Stranger Things?
Incorrect. That show is Glow. The one where Ruth is in the hospital.
Right.
Nothing Shattered.
Nothing Shattered is the episode.
Yeah.
Correct. Tara.
Yeah.
The one with the campus-wide paintball game.
Community.
Yeah, that is good for 2. Back to Allison. The one where Eleanor figures it out.
Oh, The Good Place.
The Good Place. Yes, good for 2. That was Michael's Gambit. Back to Sarah. The one where she moves to West Covina.
Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Yes. Josh Just Happens to Live Here is the actual title of that one. Tara.
Yep.
The one where Baba O'Reilly blows his mind.
Joe Parra Talks With You.
Yes. Do you know what that's actually called? The episode?
Joe Parra Reads You the Church Announcements,
yes,
right?
Yes, correct. Yes.
That was my presentation.
To Allison. The one with the lion on the boat.
The Leftovers.
The Leftovers. It's a Matt world.
Yeah.
Sarah, the one with the pride, the love,
the X-Files.
Good for 2. Tara.
Yeah.
The one where he's in the ocean for a film festival.
BoJack Horseman.
BoJack Horseman, Fish Out of Water. To Allison, the one with the future death montage.
6 feet under.
6 feet under finale. Everyone's waiting. Correct. Back to Sarah. The one where Jeevan helps deliver babies in a department store.
Hint.
HBO Max 2022.
I don't know. Sorry.
Allison with another steel mill. Here we go.
Station 11.
Station 11 is the right answer. Correct. All right, Tara.
Yep.
The one with Temba, his arms wide.
Star Trek, colon, The Next Generation.
That is good for 2. All right, let's get the scores because everybody has 1 question left.
Oh my God. Sarah has 10. I have 13. Allison comfortably in the lead with 17.
All right, well done, Allison, with those steel mills.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you use them. Everybody has
right.
1 question left. Let's play it out. This one is for Allison. The one where Geech gone to heaven, Mr. Twilliger.
Can I use my last hint?
You sure can. This episode, Fox, 1997.
The Simpsons?
Yeah, The Simpsons. Brother from Another Series with Cecil, the brother to Special Bob.
Yep.
Sarah, the one with the mad pooper.
The one with the mad pooper. I'm going to be annoyed with myself, but hint.
Fox, 2013.
Really want to answer Hell's Kitchen. And it doesn't matter, so I'm just going to say Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah, I'd kind of like to see how that would have played out. Mm-hmm. No, that's Bob's Burgers. Bob's Burgers.
Okay.
All right, last question of regulation for Tara. The one with the weeping angels.
Doctor Who.
Doctor Who Blink is the one there. All right, that is regulation, so let's get the final scores.
Sarah finished with 10. I had 15. Allison, our victor, 19 points.
Ah.
Yay.
Woo.
All right, let's play our tiebreaker. Whoever wins gets a steel meal for future use. Everybody is in on this. Are you ready? Name the show as soon as you know it. The one with Vixie Platinum and Tawny Coppercuffs.
SVU.
SVU, Law and Order. Yes, that is the episode called what? Do you remember?
Oh,
Avatar.
Avatar, yes, you are great. All right. Free steel meal there for Sarah D. Bundy, but today belongs to our value guest.
Valued guest.
Valued guest.
All right, Allison, I think you owe Allison an apology for how she would do at the start of this show.
This is my one victory out of four appearances on this podcast, I believe. So I'll take that margin.
Well done. That's how you use the steel mills, everybody. Don't be shy about using them. And that's why you got them.
That's right.
That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We opened up and traded opinions on the Japan set miniseries Shogun before going around the dial with stops at Abbott Elementary, Tokyo Vice, and True Detective Night Country. Francoise could only daydream about getting the Rising episode of Better Things into the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Allison was the winner of this week's Game Time from Catherine. Next up in the week ahead, we've got Deal or No Deal, Tarantino ER, and Elsbeth. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
it's Deal or No Deal Island, and I'm already marooned there.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Do you think she's going to die soon?
And Allison Herman.
I don't have a clever sign off.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
What better end can a man hope for?
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.